Chapter 14. It took them a few hours, but with Andy and Tosh helping, they eventually hauled most of the equipment up the hub. Jack drew Andy to one side while Tosh and Ianto started to set up the computers, telling him that he wanted a word. That earned him a belligerent snort as Andy folded his arms and glared at him. "I suppose this is where you try and sell me on the idea of joining your merry little band of lunatics," he said. Jack gave him a quizzical smile. "Well, yeah, but how did you know that?" Andy made a rude noise. "I'm psychic," he said disparagingly, making little quotation marks in midair. Jack laughed. "Oh, that was so cute." His smile widened at the horrified look that got him from Andy. "Tosh still up to her tricks with the internal CCTV, right?" He laughed again as Andy promptly went bright red. "That little minx. Wonder if she's still got the greatest hits DVD I gave her for Christmas." He mused. Then he shook himself. "Anyway, that's beside the point. Look, Andy, you've already done us a favour by staying here when some pretty weird things started to happen. And I'm willing to admit that I'd feel that little bit better if you stayed on the team for that little bit longer." Andy stared at him, torn between disbelief and an odd little thrill of pride. "I'm not one of your whiz kids, you know," he pointed out. "I'm not clever like Gwen was. I just do my job and then go home and eat fish and chips and watch football. There's nothing fantastic about my life, unless you count Cardiff City actually managing to win a match." Jack was still smiling, although Andy wondered if he was imagining that there was a slightly wistful edge to it. For one hugely disconcerting moment, he wondered if Captain Jack Harkness might not be envious of him. He shook the daft idea away as soon as it occurred, and went back to glaring, but his heart wasn't in it. He found himself looking across to where Tosh and Ianto had their heads together over some piece of equipment. "They're going to be staying with you, aren't they?" he asked. "Yes," Jack said softly, following his gaze. "That's my curse, to lead people like them into danger." Ianto smiled faintly. "You'd make a lousy job at career out of recruiting, you know." He sighed and looked back at Ianto and Tosh again. "Him and me, we hang out a bit to where Gwen was with you. Nothing too serious or regular, but we play the odd game of snooker and he's bloody lethal at pub quizzes. Couldn't look you in the eye and tell you that we were friends, but..." He paused and struggled to find the right words. "He never laughed at me. Even Gwen used to laugh at me sometimes, and while I didn't mind, it was nice to have someone take me seriously. Mind you, we could never agree on anything for more than 5 minutes at a time, so nothing's changed there. And I'm not too keen on the way he keeps bloody retconning me." "If it's any consolation, you're not the only one with that problem," Jack said dryly. "Worst thing I ever did was let him know about retcon." Andy turned around, round eyes in Jack's direction. "He retconned you?" Jack gave a short huff of laughter. "On 2 occasions that I know of, and I have my suspicions about a third. Fair's fair, though, since I've retconned him twice." He saw that Andy's eyes were so huge they were threatening to fall off his face. "Think of us as a dysfunctional family, Andy. Kind of like the Adams family." "Who?" Andy asked in bewilderment, making Jack feel ever so slightly old. "Oh, wait, they were films, weren't they? Christ, don't tell me you've got a disembodied hand running around the place." Jack chuckled. "No, although we did have a pterodactyl." He briefly wondered what had happened to Mifanway. Had they put her down when they shut down 3? "Oh, right, so you were the ones responsible for that. It figures. Used to drive the higher-ups crazy, that thing did. Anyway, to get back to the matter of my staying on here." He hesitated and gave Jack a sober look. "I'm not Gwen Harkness. I'm not even close. Don't be offering me this because you want someone like her around. She was one of a kind." "We're all one of a kind, Andy. That's what makes humans such a wonderful bunch. Even when we're making a piss-poor job of being an intelligent species. Will you stay? We can make it a trial period, no strings attached." Andy was looking at the others again. "Look at her. She barely weighs as much as your coat, soaking wet. You send someone like her out into the field?" That made Jack laugh again. "Don't let appearances deceive you. Toshiko might not be physically strong, but she's lightning fast, a fantastic shot, an escape artist to put Houdini to shame, and she can outthink most people without even trying. Back her into a corner and you'd better be in the game to win, because she won't give you any quarter." I don't know, I must be mad, Andy said, shaking his head. Stark, raving mad. But Ianto still owes me a fiver after that last snooker game, even if he refuses to accept it, and my man would have my guts for garters letting a slip of a girl fight my battles for me. All right, I'm in. But you better not try any funny business, Harkness, or you'll be singing soprano for a good month. He finished belligerently as he stuck his hand out. Jack couldn't resist. He clasped Andy's hand in a firm grip, shook it vigorously, then a hat dragged him forward to plant a smacker full on his lips, dancing away and laughing as Andy gave a howl of outrage and started to call him everything under the sun. He bounced across to where Ianto and Tosh were giving him identical looks of amused exasperation and rubbed his hands together. "So, who wants me to put a plug in their socket?" he asked with a flirtatious leer. Ianto had also squirreled away a couple of camp beds, and they had all taken turns catching a quick catnap before they had the hub in a vastly pared-down but functional mode. Jame had phoned to say that she was on her way, but Jack knew he couldn't wait until she got here before he did something about the rift. There was a dull pressure growing behind his eyes, and he was feeling a constant pull in the direction of the rift chamber that unsettled him a lot more than he was willing to admit to himself. Tosh and Andy were taking a turn on the beds when Jack suddenly realized that Ianto was missing. Some instinct took him in the direction of the rift chamber, swallowing against the sudden increase in the pull on him, as soon as he was heading in the right direction. He felt a stab of unease when he saw Ianto standing at the top of the spiral staircase leading down into the chamber proper, leaning against the railing and looking down. "Ianto?" The Welshman looked up at him, and Jack felt a jolt pass through him when it seemed for a moment that Ianto's eyes were reflecting the silver blue of the open rift. Then Ianto blinked and shifted, and his eyes were their normal blue. Jack told himself very firmly that it had been a trick of the light. He really didn't need any more weirdness coming to visit and then deciding to take up permanent residency. "Captain, what are you doing here?" Jack demanded. He shivered. His entire skin was crawling with the energies that were tearing at the fabric of their reality. It was like standing at ground zero of the biggest thunderstorm in history, and he was uneasily aware of what the temporal equivalent of lightning strikes could do. "Strange dreams," Ianto whispered, looking down into the stairwell. "Voices in the dark."
"Okay, that's what I don't like to hear you saying," Jack said crossly. "Come on, let's get back to the main hub." He reached out to grab Ianto, but the moment he touched the other man, he felt something very like an electric shock pass through him, and for a moment he was blinded by a flare of light. When he blinked away the glittering afterimages, he suddenly realized that he was somewhere other than the hub. He was somewhere above ground, with trees and plants all around him, and the sound of water rushing in the distance. The entire landscape was lit by moonlight. Jack stared around himself in confusion, registering the sight of a ruined building rising up to his left, but then his attention was caught by the sight of Ianto standing a little way away from him. He was seized by an inexplicable sense of dread, as if he was waiting for something terrible to happen. "Ianto?" He stepped forward, then froze to the spot as Ianto turned his head to look at him, a remote expression on his face. "Too late, Captain," Ianto said softly. "You've come too late." There was something else just beyond Ianto, a tall, dark, vaguely man-shaped shadow that sucked the moonlight out of the air and radiated a cold, inhuman glee that was tantalizingly familiar and terrifying. The darkness put out a hand and Ianto started to walk towards it.
"No, Ianto, wait!"
"Too late, Captain," the darkness said with a cold laugh. "Far, far too late. Ianto belongs to me now and forever." Ianto paused at the edge of the shadow and gave Jack one last sorrowful look.
"Goodbye, Jack," he said,
and then the shadows swooped down to claim him.
"No!"
Jack jerked forward, only to collide with an Ianto who was very much alive, present, and looking every bit as shaken as Jack. Jack grabbed at him and pulled him forward into a kiss without thinking, desperately trying to erase the memory of losing Ianto to the darkness. He gradually realized that Ianto was holding Anne just as tight, and that he was trembling violently. "Are you all right?" he demanded, when he eventually persuaded the other man to let go.
What
was that?" Ianto demanded, his eyes still a little wild. "I was somewhere else, and then you were there, but it wasn't here, and fuck," he said, dragging his hands through his hair.
"I don't know," Jack admitted, still trying to get his racing heart under control. "Some kind of echo off the rift. Except I don't think it was the past. At least I don't remember chasing you through a moonlit garden to try and save you from some shadow."
Ianto gave him an odd look.
"What are you talking about? And it was broad daylight, and I was trying to get to you before the Cybermen got you into the conversion chamber."
Jack blinked. "You saw that?" Ianto nodded, still looking several shades paler than normal, which made him look more of a ghost than usual. "I didn't see that." He described what his own vision had been and saw Ianto's face crease in a frown. "Some kind of personal nightmare?" he hazarded after a moment. Jack bit his lip. "It's possible, I suppose, but it felt more like a glimpse into the future. Or possible future," he amended hastily when he saw the panic flare in Ianto's eyes. Cybermen were most definitely Ianto's bogeyman, and Jack didn't want him brooding over their possible return to this reality, and the possibility that Jack might fall victim to them. "Or maybe it was what you said and we just put flesh on one of our nightmares. We should be going back. This isn't a safe place to be." Ianto still lingered, his gaze going back to the stairwell.
"Ianto?"
Jack didn't like to sound like he was begging, but he knew that he was. "Out to him."
"Can't you feel it?" he asked in a dreamy voice. "So beautiful. It feels so good against the skin. Like warm velvet."
Jack had been gritting his teeth against the insistent little prickles that were making him want to scream and tear at his skin.
"Come away, Ianto. For me."
Ianto blinked and seemed to focus on him again.
"You're shivering," he said with concern. "Come on, let's get you back to the hub. I picked up some supplies so I can at least make you some coffee."
Jack heaved a sigh of relief and gladly preceded Ianto back into the main hub, where they found Tosh yawning as she sat at one of the computers and studied the results of the diagnostic she'd been running. She smiled at them as they passed and agreed enthusiastically to Ianto's suggestion of coffee. Jack followed Ianto back into the kitchen and smiled at the way it was already beginning to look a bit more like it used to.
"You know, I don't expect you to make the coffee for everyone once we're back up and running," he said, leaning against the counter with his arms folded.
"I like making the coffee," Ianto said in mild surprise.
"I know, but I meant it when I said that we weren't going back to the old days," Jack persisted.
"You're a hell of a lot more than a coffee-making machine, and I want everyone to know that."
"Jack, I like making the coffee," Ianto said deliberately. "Besides, I've tasted what you think is coffee, and have far too much respect for my stomach lining to abuse it like that again."
"There's nothing wrong with my coffee," Jack said stubbornly. "You're just a snob when it comes to coffee."
"I'm civilized when it comes to coffee," Ianto corrected with a grin.
"Now, get out of the way and let a master work at his art. Go annoy Tosh with questions and I'll join you in a minute."
Jack chuckled, but did as he was told.
Ianto waited until he was safely on the lower level before he leaned against the counter and let the tremors run through his body. The nightmare he had found himself living had been both vivid and overwhelming. He had felt the terror and despair overwhelming him as he had run through what he had known was the Cyberman's headquarters, frantically trying to get to the conversion chamber before they put Jack into the machine. He couldn't go through that again. Dear God. He couldn't endure that particular horror again. To have lost Lisa to them had nearly broken him, but to lose Jack. His mind couldn't even begin to face that possibility, and Ianto felt physically sick as he clung to the counter and tried to get himself under control. If what had happened had given them a glimpse of the future, then he would have to face this nightmare. Because there was no way he was letting the Cybermen claim Jack, no matter how high a price he personally had to pay. Swallowing down the nausea and fear, Yento focused his attention on making the coffee, letting the normal, everyday actions soothe him and center him again. The others only saw a menial task, but to Yento there was something almost mystical about getting the coffee done just right. No matter how chaotic things might be, that small ritual gave him just enough breathing space to focus and calm down. He did that now, and gradually the trembling faded away as he pushed the fear into the back of his mind and concentrated on the here and now.
By the time he had finished and made a cup of tea for Andy, Tosh had finished giving her report to Jack, and he was pacing around the hub, a thoughtful expression on his face. He smiled his thanks as Yento handed him his mug, but continued to pace, blowing gently on the hot liquid, as he stared at something they couldn't see, and worked out what they were going to do next. Andy joined Tosh and Yento, leaning against one of the computers, and yawning sleepily while he drank his tea.
"Okay, this is what we're going to have to do," Jack eventually decided. "The way I see it, we have three options. One, we do nothing and hope for the best. The only problem with that being that the pressure will continue to increase until there's a natural rupture," Tosh put in, taking off her glasses and rubbing at her eyes with her other hand. "As with all explosions, there will be all kinds of shockwaves and debris raining down over Cardiff. If we're lucky, the entire planet, if we're not. And I would be willing to lay money that we won't be lucky," Yento said cynically. "That's a given," Jack agreed. He paused to sip at his coffee, briefly closing his eyes in appreciation, and continued. "Option two is that we open the rift in a series of controlled, interlinked pulses, a kind of controlled venting that will ease the pressure off gradually, whilst giving us a series of smaller disasters that we can maybe handle with the help of UNIT and Torchwood London. That's what you were talking about earlier, wasn't it?" Andy asked. When Jack nodded, he frowned. "I thought you decided that was the way to go."
"Yeah, well, that was before I realised just how much pressure had built up behind the dampener," Jack said. "Tosh?" Tosh rubbed her arms in unconscious nervousness. The dampener was a little bit too efficient. Not only did it dam all the rift energies, but it held them back so well that they didn't register completely on the remote readouts. The figures on the dampener itself are 5 times more powerful than we'd assumed. "Which is bad, Andy," Jack said. "In fact, it's so bad that I'm willing to bet that the first controlled blow we attempt will be our last." Andy stared at him for a moment. "You really have to work on these pep talks of yours, you know." That earned him smiles from everyone.
"So, I'm guessing that you'll be wanting to go with a third option you haven't told us about yet." "Bingo," Jack said with a wry smile. "Option three. It's not something I'd propose unless I thought there was no other way." He locked gazes with Tosh, then Yento, knowing that they would understand what he was about to say with all the attendant dangers. "Blowback." Toshiko's eyes widened and Yento nearly dropped his mug as he stared at Jack in slack-jawed amazement.
"What?"
they practically chorused. "Okay, I'm guessing I should be making a run for it about now," Andy said with a worried look at the both of them. "Just what the bloody hell is a blowback?" Jack hesitated, trying to think of a simple way of explaining that didn't sound like he was insulting the other man, but he beat him to it. "Have you ever watched them trying to put out a really big fire on an oil well?" he asked. "What, like they did in Kuwait after the Gulf War?" Andy asked. When Yento nodded, he shrugged. "Sort of. Why?" Yento grinned faintly. "How about John Wayne in the film Hellraisers?" That had Andy nodding enthusiastically. "Remember how they used to put the big fires out? By planting a charge next to the rig and blowing it up?" "Yeah, bloody dangerous if you ask me. I mean, one wrong move and hang on a mo." He suddenly straightened up and gave Jack an accusing look. "You're going to set off some sort of bomb?" "Only in the loosest possible sense," Jack said soothingly, giving Yento an exasperated look that got him an unrepentant one in return. "It won't be a physical bomb." "Now, see, that kind of statement is why I keep wanting to smack you one and then go away and get drunk," Andy said in exasperation. "It won't be a physical bomb. What's it going to be then? Made out of ooga booga stuff?" Momentarily diverted, Jack stared at him. Ooga booga stuff? He echoed in mystification. Then he shook himself. No, it'll be solid enough, but the detonation will be a temporal pulse. A really powerful one. We've only ever used small ones before, Tosh put in uneasily, and the simulations we ran on scaled-up models didn't give very viable results. Simulations aren't the same as real life, Tosh, Jack reminded her. Besides, I think this is our only hope. We set off the temporal bomb, it produces a shockwave that travels back into the rift, and all that pent-up energy implodes rather than explodes. It'll work. Are you saying that because you believe it, or because it's our only hope? Ianto asked. Bloody hell, you're as bad as he is, Andy squawked. Look, all of this sounds an even bigger load of bollocks than you usually waffle on about, but it sounds like it boils down to this. We sit here and do nothing, and everything goes boom. We go down and kick the bloody thing, and it goes boom several times. Or we give it the leathering of its life, and it maybe goes away and lodges a complaint against us. Not sure if we're voting, but if we're going to go, I want whatever it is that finishes us off to know it's been in a fight. So I'm going for the bomb thingy. There was a moment of silence before Ianto laughed softly. Couldn't have put it better myself. I go with the bomb thingy as well. Toshiko shook her head, but there was a small smile tugging at the corners of her mouth. I suppose I'd better start working on the figures then. Jack gave them his cockiest grin. Hey, come on, you doubt me? I've been blowing things up since before you were born. Ianto, I'll need your help with the physical casing. Andy?
I'm afraid this is going to be a bit of a time-out period for you.
Andy raised a hand to stop him in his verbal tracks. Just as well, because it sounds like this is going to be one of those last-stand businesses like they have on TV. Only this one's for real. If you don't need me, I'm going to go home and hug my parents, stroke the cat, tell my younger sister she's an idiot, and phone my older sister to tell her she'd better not name the kid she's carrying after some dotty relative who's likely to leave his money to his pet goldfish. Then I'm going to track my girlfriend down and drag her into a convenient laundry cupboard, and I'm going to make love to her. And then I'm going to come back to this loony bin and maybe help save the world. And my horoscope said Saturn was in retrograde and nothing interesting was going to happen. Shaking his head, he grabbed his flying jacket and left the hub, leaving a stunned silence behind him. You know, he's going to fit right in, Jack said thoughtfully. One thing has been puzzling me a little, Ianto said as he helped Jack to construct the physical part of the temporal bomb. Only one thing? Jack asked as he ran a quick check on the circuitry that they had just finished working on. I'd like to be puzzled by at least three things simultaneously. Keeps me on my toes. Ianto smiled faintly. But like the White Queen and her believing so many impossible things before breakfast, he teased. No. I was wondering why the doctor didn't pick up on this problem when he dropped you off. I wouldn't have thought he would have walked away from something like this.
Jack nodded as he put the probe to one side and closed up the casing. I kind of wondered about that myself, but I took a look at the readings and the doctor landed during a slow pulse when the rift was still building up towards this. Unless the doctor was actively looking for something out of the ordinary, it wouldn't have tripped the alarms on the TARDIS. It's all down to lousy timing, really. If he'd brought me back a couple of weeks on, he'd have caught this, and maybe been able to fix it without raising a sweat. Do you regret coming back? Ianto asked curiously. His attention still mostly on the bomb, Jack flashed him an absent smile. Not for a second, he said.
Ianto ducked his head and fiddled with some tools, doing his best to keep the huge grin that threatened off his face.
He jumped a little when he felt Jack's hand on his arm, and looked up to see the other man smiling at him.
Time and space is one thing, but here and now are more important, Jack said softly, before leaning forward to kiss him slowly and thoroughly. Ianto felt more than a little breathless when they eventually pulled away again. What about the bomb? He managed to stutter. It's ready, Jack said calmly. All we need to do now is go down to the rift chamber and hook up the bomb to the dampener, and link it with the remote control to the hub computers. I think I should be the one to go down into the chamber, Ianto suggested with a frown. I don't like the way it affects you. I'm not exactly wild about it myself, Jack said dryly. He hesitated.
He wasn't too happy about the way the rift seemed to be affecting Ianto, but there was no denying that it seemed to be a more positive experience than the ones he was going through. Normally I'd agree, but this is a pretty tricky setup, and would take too much time if you did it on your own. We'll do it together, but I'll count on you to keep an eye on me. No problem, Ianto nodded. He bit his lip and gave Jack a sideways look. After we've done that... Yeah? Jack prompted when he seemed to grind to a halt. Well, I was thinking about what Andy said and I sort of wondered... Ianto floundered to a halt and gave Jack a helpless look. Jack grinned. Do we even have a laundry cupboard? Ianto smiled back. Not really, but we have a very conveniently placed stationery cupboard. An hour later, and Ianto moaned softly as Jack planted a feathery trail of kisses along the length of his spine before biting gently at one of the cheeks of his arse. He was already hard and aching, but Jack seemed to be going out of his way to make the exquisite torture last an eternity. "You're a bloody sadist," he gasped as he twisted around on the pile of blankets he had tossed on the floor. Jack tried to keep a hold of him, but was confounded by the sweat that sheathed Ianto's body and gleamed in the harsh fluorescent lighting. Not that Jack was any better off. This part of the hub should have been cold, but it seemed to be pulsing with an almost living warmth, and he and Ianto had been indulging in some pretty intense foreplay ever since they had come back from setting the bomb. There was something Jack didn't want to have to do again in a hurry, but in some weird way the unsettling effect the rift was having on him seemed to have increased his libido, and even if Ianto hadn't already suggested it, he would probably have found himself being dragged off somewhere by an impatient Jack. Not that he was being impatient now. He felt as if they had all the time in the world, and he wanted to savour every moment he spent exploring Ianto's body. Every touch and caress, every taste of skin and kiss, every gasp and moan of pleasure was savoured and stored away, as if this was going to be the last time they would ever lie together. Jack pushed that thought away very firmly and gave a groan as Ianto pulled him down and then thrust up against him eagerly, rubbing their cocks together. "Wait, wait," he gasped, trying to pull away again. "No," Ianto said mutinously, throwing a leg over Jack's legs and pulling him back down. "Want you now." He bit down with gentle ferocity on Jack's shoulders and then thrust up again. Jack felt a spike of pleasure shoot straight right up into his hindbrain, and he forgot his objections and fell into a matching rhythm, laughing a little breathlessly at the purr of approval he got from Ianto. The anticipation had built them up to such a pitch that it didn't take long before they were writhing in mutual release, before collapsing back into the floor, panting and laughing in delight, murmuring sweet inanities as they slid into a brief doze. Tosh sat and watched the CCTV footage, and impatiently rubbed at the tears that persisted in coming. She was happy, fiercely and sincerely happy, that Jack and Ianto had finally found one another, and seemed to have finally come to their senses over how much they needed one another. She just wished, just a little bit, that she could find someone just as special for herself. She hadn't had much luck to date. First she had had a crush on Owen, and then she had fallen in love with a woman who had turned out to be a psychotic alien. Statistically speaking, there had to be someone out there for her. The only trouble was in finding that someone. After a moment, she switched off the laptop and took out her phone, dialing from memory. She held her breath as the phone rang on the other end, then let it out in relief when it was answered and she heard her grandmother's voice. The genuine pleasure in the older woman's voice when she realized who it was on the phone made Tosh feel warm all over, and she curled up in her seat as her grandmother immediately launched into the latest family gossip, while yelling at her husband to stop breaking the stupid garden and get in here to talk to his only granddaughter. Tosh smiled to herself. That special someone could wait. Right now she had her very special family to talk to. The countdown had started, and everyone was desperately trying not to watch the second hand of the clock as it swung around the face, counting down to the explosion. Andy was probably the least aware of what could happen if the bomb went wrong, but that didn't stop him from fidgeting. After a moment, Ianto turned and moved away before he gave in to the temptation of tying the man down. Jack stood with his arms folded and gritted his teeth against the urge to pace. Tosh sat at her computer and lost herself in the telemetry that was coming through. "This is worse than a penalty shootout," Andy said eventually, twitching. "I could always do a countdown for you," Tosh offered. "You do, and I may be forced to kill you," Ianto muttered, not quite quietly enough. Jack said nothing, busy going over all the figures and trying to second-guess his decisions. It would be so ironic if his first action on returning to resurrect Torchwood 3 would result in its total destruction. Every instinct he had was telling him that this was the only viable option they had, but there was still that ever-present niggle of doubt at the back of his head. Tosh suddenly jerked upright in her seat and started hammering on the keyboard. "No, no, no," she said in anguish. Jack was beside her in an instant. "What's wrong?" he demanded. "We've lost the link with the bomb," Tosh said in frustration. "A wiring fault?" Jack suggested, but Tosh was shaking her head. "It's nothing internal. This is the remote link. 1 minute everything was fine, the next it just went dead. It's almost as if someone pulled the plug." Movement from out of the corner of his eye made Jack look up in time to see Ianto running out of the door in the direction of the rift chamber. With a curse, Jack followed after him. After a long look at Tosh, Andy reluctantly followed, knowing that she had to stay at the computers to monitor and fine-tune the explosion. He was halfway to the rift chamber when he found Jack and Ianto arguing furiously. "Can't let you go on your own," Jack was yelling. "And your presence is going to help how, precisely?" Ianto shot back. "Look at you. You're not even at the chamber and you're feeling the effects. Go down there now, and there's no guarantee that all of you will come back up. Let me do this, Jack. Trust me." "I do trust you," Jack said desperately. "I just don't trust what's down there." His shoulders slumped, and for a moment he looked tired and helpless. Andy didn't even realize he was going to say anything until his mouth was open and he found words coming out. "I'll go with him," he offered. Both Ianto and Jack stared at him. "You? But I thought you hated going down there," Ianto said. "I do. It's bloody eerie down there. But I'm hoping you just need someone to come with you and make vague soothing noises while you do the actual work. I can do that. Mind you, I'll probably bitch while I'm doing it," he warned. It was worth the effort to see the smile that came to life on Jack's face then. Not the usual cocky grin or the overdone leer, but a genuine smile that reached out and warmed his eyes and made him look much younger and less intimidating. Ianto was giving him a similar kind of smile, and for a moment Andy felt a weird kind of camaraderie, like he was part of something warm and complicated. "Think of us as kind of a dysfunctional family," Jack had said, and Andy suddenly realized that he was a part of it, and he wouldn't be walking away at the end of the trial period. "You'd better get back to Tosh," he told Jack sternly. "Me and Ianto have got a job to do." Ianto waited until Jack had gone back the way they'd come before touching Andy lightly on the arm. "Thanks," he said quietly. Andy grinned. "Wait until you've had me grumbling in your ear for the next 10 minutes and then tell me how grateful you are," he said ruefully. "I suppose we'd better get to it." It was worse than he'd remembered. The sound of breathing was even more pronounced, as was the sensation of being watched. Andy was feeling more than a little nauseous by the time they got to the stairwell, and he noticed that Ianto would shake his head every now and then, as if he was being bothered by some insect flying too close. They descended down the stairwell, but about halfway down, Andy felt as though he had walked into a soft but unyielding wall, and he stopped. Ianto paused to look back, and Andy felt a flash of superstitious dread when it looked as though Ianto's eyes were shining a soft silver colour. The moment passed immediately. Ianto's eyes were normal again, but Andy felt oddly shaken. Beneath them was the rift chamber, huge and vast, with shattered black light casting sinuous and constantly changing shadows on the floor. "What's wrong?" Ianto asked. "Something." Andy put out his hand and felt the strange sensation of being stopped by something his eyes told him didn't exist. "I can't come any further." Ianto's eyebrows threatened to disappear into his hairline, and he patted at the air between Andy's hands experimentally. He obviously didn't feel anything, and after a moment he shrugged. "Stay here, then, while I go and see what's happened to the bomb." He clattered down the remaining stairs, seemingly unaffected by whatever was in the chamber, and made his way to where the bomb was nestled in the shadow of the dampener. Andy watched as he checked all around the bomb, and then followed the wiring that attached it to the dampener. He made an exclamation that startled Andy with its vehemence. "What's wrong? The wires have come loose from where we spliced them into the dampener. That's odd. They look like they've been ripped out." He bent his head to look closer, kneeling down beside the bomb. Andy was distracted by an odd rippling effect a little way behind him. Then his eyes widened as a man appeared as if from nowhere. Tall, elderly and slender, dressed in fussy old-fashioned clothes, and looking like some sort of dandy from another age, he was giving Ianto a disapproving look as he approached him. Andy's astonishment gave way to horror when he saw that the man had produced a knife from somewhere, and was obviously going to use it on Ianto. "Hey, you stop that!" he yelled. "Ianto!"